For NPR Music, this is Alt Latino. I'm Jasmine Garst.
And I'm Felix Contreras. Today, we're going to do something a little different. In fact, completely different. We're dedicating an entire show to a genre we really haven't explored much on our program. That's Latin heavy metal.
Now, if you're completely clueless when it comes to heavy metal, or Latin heavy metal in particular, don't worry, you're not alone. I have to confess that I really know nothing about heavy metal, and I'm going to be asking some very basic questions today. But you know, I was also really surprised to find that I pretty much love most of the music picks that our guests brought in today.
You know, before we go on, I need to say that my heavy metal credentials go way back. I just want everybody to know.
Come on.
In that I bought Black Sabbath's Master of Reality when it was new, okay?
That just
means
you're
back in
old.
The seventh grade. Of course it means I'm old. But I have to admit, though, I haven't really kept up with this genre. So we've invited two people who do know what's going on and what they're talking about. NPR producer extraordinaire and heavy metal blogger Lars Gotrich. Lars writes the Vikings Choice series on the All Songs Considered blog. And Miguel Palafox, who joins us from Mexico City, and he runs the blog Search and Destroy. Gentlemen, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for the invite.
Yeah, great to be here.
So what do you want to start us off with?
There's been a revival of classic heavy metal around the world, and it's hit Mexico as well. And there are several bands like Voltex and Split Heaven. Split Heaven is a band from Querétaro, and they're one of the most important upcoming promises of heavy metal. And they combine thundering speed, 80s metal riffs that we all miss, and high-pitched vocals. We can leave you with the song The Devil Isn't Fool. You can check out their new music video. It's coming out next week on their website.
So, Miguel, vocally, this reminds me a lot. I mean, basically, my metal knowledge is very limited to, in terms of Latin metal, Sepultura and Rata Blanca. And I was reading that this band, they got to be respected in the Mexican scene by supporting, actually, Rata Blanca. Then Hammerfall from Sweden. And one of the questions I have for you is, how does, in the Latin metal world, what is the road to becoming a big Latin metal band?
Oh, well, that's a million-dollar question. I mean, it's almost impossible for a metal band to make it in Latin America. I mean, Sepultura's case was unique. And Rata Blanca, well, they're well-known in Latin America and maybe U.S. Hispanic, but that's probably it. So it's just dedication and love for the music, really.
Lars, when you hear this song, no, what do you hear? Can you try to put it in like a historical context, in the genre context?
Well, this is a style of music that I'm slowly becoming more acquainted with, like the classic 80s heavy metal, like denim jacket, high top sneaker kind of metal. And it's just the kind of thing that's really fun and kind of carefree. And, you know, personally, and I think this is from Miguel's case as well, I like the screamier stuff a lot better, but I'm coming around to like this more fun, ridiculous, over the top. I mean, this guitar solo happening right now.
Like, I can smell the hairspray.
Yes.
Is that guitar solo what you guys are calling Thunder and Storm? Is that what you said, Thunder and Storm?
No, Thunder and Speed.
Is that what you're talking about?
I'm certainly part of it, but I think, it's just a matter of, like, that fist-pumping attitude that maybe Miguel is referring to. It's just, I want to go punch somebody in the face after I've had this beer and kissed my woman.
Yeah, it's like this over-the-top masculinity.
Oh, So where can we go from here?
Maybe now it's time to get screamy.
Uh-oh.
I'm going to move us to the Dominican Republic.
Awesome.
Yeah. This is a band, at least from press releases and everything that I've read, the first white world-distributed death metal band from Dominican Republic ever. They're called my Greek is not so good, but they're called Archaios, which is Greek for archaic. They've been around since 1994, but have only really produced two albums since then. Their sound is directly from Swedish death metal, but I read an interesting interview with the band that if you listen closely and you happen to know it, you can hear a little bit of merengue and bachata rhythms in what they do.
Wow.
So I don't know those particular Latin rhythms too well, but maybe you guys can hear it.
Let's put it to the test. Let's hear something.
This is Approaching of My Demise from the Distant.
Okay, here we go.
So screamy.
I hear some people might not hear it, but I do hear like a merengue beat buried very deep in there.
Miguel, are there bands, metal bands from throughout Latin America that incorporate traditional rhythms in some way in their music?
There are not many, but there are a couple.
Let's talk about, let's deconstruct it if we can a little bit about it, because one thing I noticed, it's like I'm always fascinated. I may not have listened to it in the 80s, but I'm always fascinated with that double bass drum. They're doing those rolls. You know, they got those feet going brrr, like almost like a chainsaw in a lot of ways. And the tempo was very fast. And there's a lot of intricate. You got to be a good guitar player to do this stuff. And you got to be a good musician to keep up with it. It's not always in 4/4. They're sometimes doing it odd time signatures. Are those the kind of things we're listening for when we listen to metal like this?
Yeah, well, it's very typical to have double bass drums in death metal. But I guess the band we just listened to was melodic death metal, which isn't as brutal as regular death metal. And its origins are from the early 90s in Sweden, from the Gothenburg scene. And but it's quite interesting to have a Latin band that incorporates their like merengue or bachata into their music. I've never heard it before. Quite interesting blend.
And I've always kind of wanted to ask about this vocal style. Is this this vocal style is that characterized death metal?
Yeah, it's called growling.
Yeah.
So I guess this is a really silly question, but how do you do that?
I can't physically do it. I tried. My mom is a professional vocalist, so I grew up in that. And so like if she ever caught me doing that, I would have been, you know, slapped in the wrist and crossed, you know. So I can't physically do it, but it you do ruin your voice. And I know some vocalists actually go to like vocal trainers, so they don't completely screw up their vocal cords, but they continue to growl and scream.
Miguel, can you do this?
Yeah, I can try.
Here's my growl story. I was in Monterrey, Mexico a few years ago doing some stories on Latin alternative music or rock español. And I went to this club, Club Iguana. Miguel, do you know that song? I mean, that club in Monterrey?
Yeah, it's famous for some metal show. Brujeria played there a lot.
So I'm there, and I'm there to do some interviews, and there's a band, there's a metal, death metal band going to set up and play, and they're sound checking, and the guy was sound checking his growl. Because you know, I always thought, well, you know, it doesn't matter what it sounds like. But there was definitely an art to it, because just the right amount of, you know, audio effects, and then he was okay with it. To me, that was fascinating and interesting and kind of fun.
Miguel, I want to take you back to what you were talking about, metal being accepted in Latin America. And I also recently read an article with this band, Arcaios?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. On the metal blog, InvisibleOranges.com.
Great blog.
And the band was asked if they had ever received political backlash when they try to play in their native Dominican Republic, which is a very conservative country. And they said, yes, that used to happen a lot back in the 90s and early 2000s. Things have gotten a little bit better when it comes to this. But by now, the damage is done, and the venues to play metal are fewer than before. There has always been an association between metal and esoteric and fantastic stories, and that usually doesn't translate well in a third world country. How would you say this is the case for the rest of Latin America, too?
Well, at least not for Mexico. I mean, metal is more accepted now, but I concur with what you said about metal being associated with, Satanism or esoteric themes. And, I don't know the Dominican Republic, but they're probably more conservative than in Mexico. And it's a tiny country, so probably they've never heard a lot of metal before. So I see where those guys are coming from.
We've got a lot of music to cover today, so let's move on to the next one. Lars, what do you think we should move on to next?
Well, I actually really love to play that Acrania song that Miguel mentioned earlier. It's again another case where they're using Latin rhythms, unlikely metal instruments. It was probably one of my favorite things that Miguel sent my way this past week.
It's called Despair from Unbreakable Fury from 2010.
Okay, listening to the song, I don't hear a lot of Latin jazz or anything. It sounds very traditional in the sense of the genre. There's no more words left to say. Okay, so that sounded like almost Santana-like in a way, kind of a subdued Santana-like. I know later on in the song there's even percussion and horns.
Yeah, well, the guitar does indeed sound very Santana-like. I guess it's sort of the Latin jazz influence.
This sounds very much like a Latin jazz fusion band.
So that means Felix likes it a lot.
No, well...
God! wayside. Tears of life. Now it is with a great smile.
Now, I have a question that Lars and I have had offline this discussion several times about how heavy metal as a genre is popular in Latin America and in Europe compared to in the U.S. Like, it's more accepted in the mainstream. And an anecdote that I like to tell is, a while back, I went back to Argentina to visit my family, and I went with my boyfriend at a time, and he was trying to be very culturally sensitive with my cousins, and like, oh, what music, you know, speaking in Spanish, and what music do you like? Do you like tango or cumbia? And my cousins were like, yes, yes, okay, but better Judas Priest. Because they were really big metal fans. And I was hoping, Miguel, that you could give some insight into that. Why is metal maybe more accepted in Europe and in Latin America than in the United States?
I do agree. I mean, metal is very popular in Latin America. I mean, at least in Mexico, it's huge. I mean, you get bands like Metallica playing for 3 nights in a row for 50,000 people, and also in Argentina. But why? I don't know. People, I guess people are so passionate here that maybe you're not passionate about salsa or merengue or norteña, but you're passionate about metal. We're very passionate. I think that's the reason why.
Well, just before the show, Lars and I were talking, and I thought it was interesting that you talked about how in Latin America and in certain parts of Europe, that metal can be considered mainstream. There isn't, again, the stigma or the separation. Can you talk a little bit about that, Lars? And Miguel, if you have any thoughts on that, about metal being mainstream in Latin America.
I think metal was mainstream in the 80s in America. I mean, that was the era of, Metallica and Iron Maiden. And, you know, it was more arena friendly back then. Metal's gone so underground in the last 20 years. And I don't know. I think it was because metal felt like metal has always been for outcasts. And I think in America especially, maybe we took that a little bit too much to heart and didn't want to reach out to a more wider audience. But I can't speak to what's happening in Latin South America.
Well, Miguel, would you say that in Latin America, metal is going more mainstream, or is it just as underground as ever?
It's not mainstream at all. It's underground, and you will never hear a metal song on the radio.
Cool. What do we have next?
I'd like to introduce a band called Godzilla, and they play stoner rock, and they've been around since 2007. And they've recorded a lot for compilations. They're finally putting it together after a couple of lineup changes, and they're recording their first LP this year. And there's a song I really like called Martial Arts. It was recorded in 2010. Godzilla's from Mexico City.
This is kind of my jam, though.
Yeah?
Yeah, I really like this. And I can definitely hear what Miguel is saying about the kind of Black Sabbath influence. Vocally, though, I almost... Do I hear some, like, almost like Rage Against the Machine style?
It's pretty grunge. I don't know that you would say rage, but it's definitely kind of early 90s Seattle kind of grunge kind of vocal style, but nice big fat psychedelic riffs. I can get behind it.
Felix?
You know, it does sound like a little bit like the old Black Sabbath. You know, one of the things that I wanted to bring up is like all of those bands that, you know, sort of started metal, Deep Purple, Led Zeppelin, Black Sabbath back in the 70s, they were all sort of blues-based. They were all definitely blues-based. It was, you know, almost like an electric psychedelic boogie thing to them. And this, that's what reminds me of this song here, because it's not exactly a blues progression, but it's more, it's, how do I say it? There's more of a feeling from that classic sound in this song than the others that we've played so far. Miguel, is this band, is this typical of what they do?
Yeah, actually, well, for stoner rock, or this kind of, this subgenre of metal, it's very typical to have blues influences. And as you said, it's all based in the 70s hard rock scene, the metal godfathers as Deep Purple, I don't know, Blue Cheer, Black Sabbath, and all those. But yeah, you're right.
Do you guys consider Led Zeppelin metal?
They were proto-metal. They kind of laid down the bases for metal to happen.
Okay. Yeah. Felix and I just had a pretty big argument over breakfast. Which, I mean, breakfast at the cafeteria of NPR.
Uh-huh.
We didn't wake up together.
Let's make that clear.
Hey, Mrs. Contreras.
Yeah, my wife listens to this show.
So
let's hear some more music.
Miguel, I do have another question. I've noticed a lot of the bands, if not all of the bands that that we're listening to here, that they're singing in English. Would you say that most metal bands in Latin America sing in English, or are there also is there a trend of that?
Yeah, well, I guess, well, at least in Mexico's case, most bands sing in English, and I think what they're trying to do is they're trying to emulate the European or the American scenes. And that's why you don't get that many bands that mix Latin elements to their music. They might sing about their Latin roots and about Aztec mythology and all that, but still, they would sing in English. And actually, that's some sort of discussion. When bands sing in Spanish here, people don't get it, and they sort of put them apart, and they want to listen to people singing in English. I don't know why.
That's so fascinating. I guess that leads me to another question, which is we've done a lot about Latin music and its politics, like the politics of Latin music, and when Latin artists talk about Latin politics. Are there types of Latin metal that are more political than others?
No. Well, I think people, although death metal comes from punk influences, I wouldn't say, punk was very anti-system and political. I wouldn't say metal in Mexico has anything to do with politics. I mean, not many bands sing about, they sing a lot about oppression and the system, but it's very, not many bands do it, really.
What do you have next, Lars?
Well, I'm going to take us to Brazil with a band called Crucium. It's a band of three brothers. They've been playing for 20 years. They put out their eighth album last year, and they're just one of those death metal bands that just keeps, who's just consistently writing great music and writing great songs, and some of the most ridiculous riffs and solos out of anywhere of this world, not just Brazil. I mean, this song, The Great Execution, we should just listen to it. Just put it on.
It just, it reminds me that even going back to Led Zeppelin, like some of the best metal songs, again, from what little I know, I always have to qualify that, but it just seems like, it's the best are a collection of great riffs, and just sort of not piled on top of each other, but a nice progression through the whole thing.
Crucium's got just a really great groove. I think that's what they're best at. They know how to kind of get into the mindset of a riff that just makes you want to push people around and incite other types of violence within the pit.
That's interesting that you say that, because I can totally see myself adding this to, you know, I run, and I would really like to, like, now go and add some metal into my jogging playlist. This makes me want to, like, run and be physical.
If I actually worked out, I would work out to metal.
Yeah, and it, okay. Another question I wanted to ask you guys, which I'm sorry, I'm asking really basic questions out of genuine curiosity. How important are lyrics in these bands? Because honestly, even though this is in Portuguese, in any language, I have some difficulty capturing what the lyrics are saying in some of these more death metal songs. How important are the lyrics?
To me personally, it's only been in the last year that I've been become a lyrics person, started caring about what people are saying. And I have found that people in across all metal genres are very careful about what they're saying. They're actually pretty passionate about what they're writing about. I mean, sometimes they're writing about some silly or gory things. Kusium is, they write about murder and things like that. But they're doing it in very artful B-movie, horror movie ways, or some of them are writing about very dark world kind of politics and like atrocities, and some of them, to be perfectly honest, are writing about Satanism. but these things are very important to them, and even though they're growling or screaming them and sometimes you can't understand them right away, I found that a lot of metal bands like to print their lyrics. And
yeah, that's what I was going to ask you, like, how do you know that that's what they're saying? Do you have a special metal super ability that you can understand what they're saying and I can't?
Well, sometimes some metal bands are more easier to understand than others. Some are just completely can't understand. Do you feel the same way, Miguel?
I do. Actually, I totally agree. Bands, well, especially when it comes to writing, and this was Sepultura's case, even though they didn't speak English, they have this amazing English vocabulary. I mean, they come up with words. You have to go search your dictionary and to know what they're talking about. And they do take a lot of time and put in a lot of effort into writing the lyrics.
Miguel, where do you want to take us next?
Maybe with The Architect, which is a progressive band. And they come from Mexico City as well. And they've been around since 2005, but it was a solo project, and from Genaro Ochoa, who wrote all the music, and then he started compiling a band to record the album and started playing live. The album came out in 2008. It's called Hyperstructure, and the song is called Through Broken Glass.
Okay, Miguel, very interesting selection. You know, what did you hear in this song? Can you tell us a little bit about it and why you brought it to the show?
Yeah, well, there aren't many. I mean, Mexico is a country in which most metal fans, they're diehard fans, and they only like death metal and black metal, like typical genres, and like really harsh and masculine. But progressive metal isn't very popular in Mexico, at least with Mexican bands. I mean, Dream Theater is quite popular in Mexico, but people who play progressive metal, they're sort of, I would say, metal geeks, and they're like virtuosos in their instruments. And that's why I chose, actually, and The Architect, it was a self put record. It was all independent, and they paid for the whole record, and actually the production is amazing.
Okay, I want to call one this time. Because when I was previewing the music, I was fascinated by this song called Underlife. Who is it? What's the name of the band?
Inferion.
Where are they from?
They're from Miami. They're Cuban. And their band has been around for, I think, for quite a while, I think. But they've only put out two albums. Its main member, Nick Rees, is a member of the U.S. Army. So Nick wrote and recorded most of these songs while he is deployed in Iraq.
This is Underlife. And I'll tell you why I decided.
Yeah, why do you? I'm curious. Why do you like this music?
You know, just because of the, you know, all the, just because of the intricacy of the music. Like I said, you got to be a good musician to play this music. It's not throwaway stuff, as maybe some people think. You know, again, the double bass doing like these 16th, maybe 32nd notes. You know, I mean, like they're just, it's just driving, and the whole idea of using those. Floor, you know, the whole idea of using the bass drum to propel the music, which gives it like a bigger sound, and then lots of real fast drum rolls across the drum kit. I imagine, you know, a massive drum set with all the different tones and the drums, you know, finely tuned. And the guitar riffs, everything about this song just made me sit up and listen. Because, yeah, again, I'm just listening for the musicality of it, and it's just so rich.
I mean, I want to get Miguel's reaction to this, but the thing that is sometimes funny to me is how worldwide metal has become, because here's a duo from Miami, a very hot place, playing music mostly popularized by a bunch of Norwegians in the early 90s, a very cold, desolate place, and they made that music because it was cold and desolate. And Miguel, so... Miguel, can you talk to the influence of the early 90s Norwegian black metal scene on Latin America? It fascinates me.
Yeah, well, it fascinates me too. And I actually was curious about the band being from Miami as well. I have a question. Do they use corpse paint?
No, I don't think so.
Whoa, what's corpse
paint? Wait, hold on. Hold on.
Whoa, what's corpse paint?
All right, so very briefly, it's black and white face paint, usually denoting some kind of design specific to that band. Like, there's this band from Norway called Immortal, and they've literally used the same face corpse paint design since they first began, and so they're very recognizable.
Okay, pardon my ignorance, but sure. like Kiss?
Yeah, well, I guess it comes a bit from Kiss, but more from Merciful Fate, which is a band from Denmark from the 80s, and the singer, King Diamond, used to do this whole makeup thing in his face, And that's, I think, what comes from, because black metal, like the first wave of black metal from the 80s, they didn't use corpse paint at all.
And then kind of the Norwegian faction in the early 90s kind of took it on to, it's almost kind of, almost feels somewhat of a, like a tribal ritual, like a ritual for them to put on this paint, because it allows them to basically be as hellacious as they can be underneath this corpse paint.
Yeah, and I actually I was asking about the corpse paint because I can't imagine with the heat in Miami playing in front of an audience and sweating black and white paint. I mean, it's ridiculous. It sounds ridiculous, but well, I guess it happens. Maybe there are bands here in Acapulco who play black metal. I don't know.
All right, Lars, we have two more songs. What's next?
Let's move to the other side of the United States, to L.A., with a band called Tucaria. This is the song Raw to the Rapine. Kind of fascinating to me. They're a member of a collective of musicians in the Southern California area called the Black Twilight Circle. They're all Mexican American. Their collective does everything from kind of like really fast, crazy hardcore to more atmospheric and psychedelic black metal. And a lot of their lyrics have to deal with Mexican mythology. And it's just really out there stuff. And Tucaria is a one-man black metal band. Tucaria means it's Yaqui, which is a northern Mexican tribe. It's Yaqui for night.
Yaqui also being the tribe that was used by the author Carlos Castaneda in his books, The Trials, or his books about Don Juan, the Curandero, which also dealt with a lot of mysticism and a lot of the pre-Columbian myths of that era.
And Carlos Castaneda wrote an amazing novel about death metal.
I'm learning
not
something.
Not really. Question, there's just so many elements in this song. How can you possibly be a one-man band?
That's what home studios are for.
I'm just kind of imagining this dude on stage, like, doing drumming and then running to the mic and
running back to
the guitar.
I don't think Tucaria is a live effort. He's part of a lot of other bands that do play live. but I don't think Tutaria does too much stuff live.
I would imagine, being a one-man band.
Well, he would, you know, ask some of his, you know, fellow Black Twilight people to come in and play with him, I would imagine.
I'm wondering also, we're hearing a lot of bands that are from Latin America and then some Latin bands here in the U.S. Miguel, what is the crossover? Well, I guess this is a question for both of you. What is the crossover of appeal of Latin metal bands? I mean, how often do Latin metal bands come into the U.S. audience? Do you feel they get the respect they deserve?
Well, I don't think so. I mean, I live in Mexico. Lars could probably respond better, but I don't think many Mexican bands go to the States and play. I mean, there are a couple, the Chasm and Brujeria, which is their Mexican-American, but I think they're more popular in Europe, actually, Mexican bands.
And that's typically the case for most metal. I think a lot of, even American metal bands, they tend to like to play Europe more, because they can actually make money, and the people actually come out to the shows. And I mean, that's no slight on American metal scene, because it is growing and a lot more people are paying attention and going out to shows. But I don't know, unless you're like a Metallica or a Slayer, you're not going to be selling out these huge, you know, venues and clubs and stuff.
Well, before we go, I do have a question for each of you. Like I said at the beginning of the show, I came into it pretty apprehensive, like, well, you know, let's see what this is about. But I was pretty surprised that I love most of these songs. And I kind of wanted to ask each of you, I know there's a lot of people out there who are as apprehensive as I was about listening to metal. What is one misconception about heavy metal that you, if you got a chance, would dispel?
We're all actually pretty nice people. No, I've actually, just from my interactions with other metalheads, from interviewing metal musicians for the All Songs Considered blog, you know, just about every week, most of these guys are really nice. They're generally really open and willing to talk about why they love metal so much and why it's so important to them, because this is their life. This is their art. And they may look scary in a promotional photo, or if you see a video of them on YouTube, that's just part of, they're just getting their demons out. I mean, that's what any rock band does, really. It's like they're getting their demons out on stage. And that's what they're doing in this music. That's what they're doing on when they're performing.
And Miguel, what about you?
I totally agree. Actually, there's this story. I was doing an interview with Gorgoroth, they're a band, black metal band from Norway. And they're like uber satanic. And they were like putting their corpse paint on in the backstage while I was doing the interview. And they actually changed the bass player. They have an American playing bass for them. And he used to play in death metal band Obituary from Florida. And I was talking to him about how difficult it is. He has to travel to Norway all the time to rehearse and record the records. And he told me, well, they're practically a family. And sometimes a Norwegian guy come to Florida and stay with him. And they even brought their kids. And they all go to Disneyland. So, yeah, I mean, we're regular people. We're just, I don't know, I think just like Lars said, it's just to cast your demons out. And it's something that we're passionate about, but we're not bad people.
Well, guys, thank you so much for stopping by today, and I hope we have to do a classics of Latin metal pretty soon.
I would actually love an introduction, like a proper introduction to Latin metal.
Like a 101.
More than just Sepultura, because really, that's all I know.
Well, great. Mm-hmm. What do you guys want to go out on?
Yeah, well, I guess we can play Majestic Downfall's Majestic Embrace from the Downfall album, which came out last year. Majestic Downfall is a band from Querétaro as well, like Split Heaven, and it's a one-man band as well, by Jacobo Córdoba, and it's inspired by this bands from the 90s, like it's a doom band, doom death metal.
Okay, and what's the name of the song?
It's called Majestic Embrace.
This was very enlightening. Thanks, guys, both of you. Miguel in Mexico City. Again, this was very enlightening. A lot of fun, I got to say. Miguel Pelafox, thank you very much for joining us from Mexico City.
Well, thank you for the invite. And well, if your audience does like metal, well, they won't get into more metal. They can log online into searchanddestroy.net. And we're the biggest metal site in Spanish. And thanks again for the invite.
And Lars, thank you for joining us.
And don't forget to follow Lars's Tumblr, everyone. It's totalvibration.tumblr.com. That's right, isn't it?
That's right.
Okay, great.
Hails, everybody.
If you want to listen to the songs we play today in their entirety, you can find them on our website. That's npr.org/altlatino.
And don't forget to follow us on Facebook and Twitter.
Special thanks to our producers, Mike Katziff and Jessica Goldstein.
This has been a very, very headbanging version of Alt Latino. I'm Felix Contreras.
And I'm Jasmine Garst, a new metal fan. This has been Alt Latino.
Thanks for listening.